Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday, the 12th of April. Very nice to have you with us on this rainy Wednesday. Just very nice that we are all around a round table and we have bellied up to the bar, and we hope that you will join us and sort of opine on what is happening in the news. And you can do so by writing to us, panel@wamc.org. So Sarah LeDuc, who is our wonderful producer of this program, put a little reminder in my notes today that wanted me to remind listeners to please keep your letters short and to the point. Don't include links because we can't click them on the air. And these are rules, right, Alan? We've had these rules for a long time.
Yeah, and a couple of other rules. If you say cruel, I mean really cruel things about a guest on Vox Pop or on the panel or whatever else.
Or us.
It's not helpful. It's not helpful. We're bigger than that and we can understand. But that's a good rule. Don't do that. Don't take out your
civility.
Your bile on us.
Here's another tip. Leave out all those expressions like "with all due respect" and "no shade to put in the name here." Those things don't mean anything. We know it's an attack. Just go right for it. It'll cut down your word usage.
Okay. Can you?
We don't totally agree on that one, Rosemary.
You like those "with all due respect" where you're bracing?
It's not that I like it. It's just that I think it lends itself to a little bit more civility than, just bile.
Can you remind me of that? Because I have a story about that will figure into one of the things that we're talking about. So just think of that in a second. But we have other things to talk about here for a moment. Let me introduce the panel. That's one of the first things we have to do. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. Well, I'm all right. But I was up late because I went to the Seder in Daniel Osmond's Seder, the Dreamaway Lodge. And it was quite a thing. A lot of lovely people. And a lot of people were mentioning the Jews leaving Egypt and relating it to our current immigration policies. That's all I got to say for that for right now.
All right. Well,
interesting.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Also, Rich Honan is here. Rich Honan is a corporate attorney, and he joins us most Wednesdays. And this is one of those Wednesdays. And we're more than happy that he's here.
Good morning. I was not at a Seder last night. I have to admit.
You're Seder-free this year?
I didn't go last night.
All right. You're going to keep it at that?
Yeah.
All right. I want to start off the show. We have an announcement to make, and I was hoping this day would never come, but it has, and there's really not much you can do about it other than be upset. Let me just say this, and then I will turn it over to the person who is making this necessary, and that is that our dear Rosemary, who has been with us since the inception of this panel several years ago, is going to be leaving us on this program, as well as leaving this region as her primary residence. I will turn it over to Rosemary to explain to the listeners of what you are going to be up to, because it is very cool. You're not just like doing this to spend more time with your family.
Yeah, I originally said yes, I have to spend more time with my family. No. Actually, my mother does need me, and my sisters are all arranging, so that we can take care of her. But the real reason I'm leaving is, well, Rich, because of the person you elected president. I am one of those people who do not want to be here while he's president. I don't want to contribute taxes for his little plots. And because I'm an investigative editor, this seems like a chance to go and do that. So I'm going to be working with a group called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. Listeners have heard me talk about it. I've done part-time work with them for years. And that's where I worked before I came to Albany. So I'm going back with them. My first assignment will be in Amman, Jordan, working with Arabic journalists who have no real tradition of investigative reporting, but lots of corrupt politics. And businessmen, and we think it's a rich market. We're going to start digging into it.
So you'll be going to Jordan.
And the,
go ahead, Alan.
And I was going to say, and the most extraordinary thing of all, you're giving up a tenured job at the university to do it.
Yeah.
Thereby probably making you the first or second person in history to do that.
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's very, I grew up in Albany, and all of my classmates went to the state of New York as their primary employment, and I thought I was so smart. No, I was above all that, and didn't do that. Now all my friends who work for the state are retiring and have great pensions and great health care, and I was a little envious. So I hooked into that with SUNY, and I really love the job there and here. But and I could have coasted. It would have been easy to live out my last years of retirement and get a nice health plan and a, you know, secure position. But it feels like I every day here preach about getting up and resisting or working for what you believe in. And so I have to do what I preach.
So you will be in Jordan first, but Bosnia and maybe even Africa, right?
Yeah, it's and the group I'm working with has gotten a huge, huge, huge grant from the U.S. government, so it could be rescinded at any time. But they have a huge grant to expand investigative reporting training and actual work. So we're looking now at how best to spread the network.
You know, the one of the things about your leaving it, if, for those of us who've been on the panel, we've known for a while, so we've had time to absorb and come to terms with it as much as we can. But we did want to bring in listeners. Obviously, you'll be leaving in the beginning of May.
It's the middle of May. I'm going to leave because I'm finishing out. You know, certainly my students here. I'm not neglecting, and I'll actually go as a consultant to the overseas organization. Continue at the university through the end of the summer. So.
Are you excited?
Yes, excited, a little scared. Living in I've lived over abroad before, but it's hard in places like in Algeria where I lived. You can't even read the road signs and understand what they are. You know, you have a map and all the road names and things are in English, and then the signs on the street are in Arabic, and they don't go together. And so it takes some adjusting. And I'm old now, but I'll figure it out.
You know, so obviously, one of the first things when Rosemary told us this is Alan said, "Well, we have to have a party for Rosemary. We have to celebrate Rosemary and bid her farewell." So we're going to do that, and we're going to do it on the 4th of May. It's a Thursday, the 4th of May, and from 9 to 11, we're going to have a roundtable panel live at the Linda. And all of our favorite panelists that we could fit, Teresa Bourgeois, Ira Fussfeld, Rich Honan, Libby Post, Barbara Smith, Mike Spain, and Alan, obviously Alan and I will be hosting. And we're going to do it from 9 to 11. We'll be on the air 9 to 11. But we would love to invite you. To come. Rosemary had asked if this could be very kindly as a fundraiser for the station to put money into the lockbox. So we're asking for a donation of $100 for a pair of tickets. We did find out we have Wolf's Beer Garden will be catering the affair. They have come forward and said
That's
that they're
cool.
going to be catering it. And so there will be food and beverage, and it will be a lovely morning. And we're going to put you right in the center. And then we'll have...
you do that all the time.
No, we're going to put you right in the... But no, like, I'm... Between now and May 4th, I will find a throne. I swear to God, I will.
I thought it was more like the cheese in the middle. What's that? The cheese stands alone.
And we'll obviously talk and about issues, but we'll also, you know, talk a little bit about what you're doing and the philosophies and so forth. So if you want to, we know from the fund drive, don't we, Alan, that Rosemary, a lot of people love Rosemary, and as we
they do.
Well, those who don't can pay because I'm leaving. That's cause for celebration, too.
That's right.
Paul, all you guys who write to us every day.
By the way... Nice letter last night.
Oh, yeah.
Tone that one down. Yeah. Good Lord. I can't even read that one. I can't even read the first line on the air.
It wasn't that bad, Joe.
Okay. I win.
His note was much nastier.
So please join us.
I thought you were great. I thought you were great, Rosemary.
I figure I'm leaving. You can't fire me.
No,
we're
done.
No. Calling it what it was. It was great.
All right, so Rosemary will be leaving, and we are very saddened, but we hope you will help us celebrate her tremendous contributions to WAMC and bid her farewell at our Roundtable Live panel at the Linda on May 4th, which will not officially be your last day on the air, but it will be the day that we can have the party.
Right.
And that's May 4th, 9 to 11. And come and join us. We're going to have doors will be open at 8. So you can do this online, WAMC.org. WAMC.org, and it is available there online. And again, $100 for a pair of tickets, and it will be a lovely catered affair for 2 hours. You can come in as long as you want. If you can only make it for an hour or two, you know, you don't have to stay for the entire time. Just we just ask you to stay till a break, and then you can go on out. But we will have it from 9 to 11, and all of our panelists will be there, and it should be a very enjoyable morning. So a sad occasion for us, but we'll celebrate in good Irish
style. This is cool. I've taken up as much time as one of Alan's musical announcements.
Oh, wow, we'll miss you. All right. So, with
that, so they didn't fire me. That's the main thing they want to get across.
Yeah, that is really what we're trying to get across.
Rosemary, I just want you to know I was slated to go to Fire Island that weekend.
Oh.
But that day, so I'm going to stay.
So, all right. So please join us. By the way, we've sent out an email. Rosemary has a lovely message to listeners about what she's been doing and much of what she said here on the air. And there's also a link there. So look for that in your email and you can and take part. So we do have a limited number of seats. So please do this as soon as you can. And again, Rosemary's been kind enough to have all this go into the lockbox. So that's lovely as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get the show started. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Albany Marriott. With 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space, with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation, Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. Alacrity Frame Workshop, Lark Street, Albany, New York. Offering custom framing and new exhibits every first Friday, open 7 days a week, 518-915-1956. And Sunwood Builders, Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features, sunwood-builders.com.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. All right, we got the sad news out of the way, so let's we got that sad news. Let's move on to other sad news, and we'll talk about what's going on in the news this morning and find out what is happening. Of course, let's start with this story just because it's probably the easiest for us to talk about in the time that we have, at least to get started on it, and that is Sean Spicer's comments yesterday in regards to Hitler and Syria, and saying, well, at least Hitler didn't use poison gas. And then
use chemical weapons.
Chemical weapons, I apologize. And then sarin gas was right, and then they mentioned that. And then
they didn't really use it on his own people the way that Assad, he even pronounced the name of the Syrian president.
Why does he have trouble with that name?
I don't know, but I have such trouble with pronunciation. I can't knock him for that.
Yeah, but he doesn't even come close. It's
no,
like
he doesn't. Assad.
Didn't Bush have Bush had a problem with Saddam?
Oh, Saddam.
Remember
Saddam Hussein? Yeah.
But he's like Felicia Ayers, Assad. You know, and it's just it.
My favorite though is when, like, at his second or third or fourth apology, and he's on TV and he goes, "says I really hate to be detracting from the president's efforts to destabilize the Middle East."
That's great.
Very good. So
poor guy was rattled.
So the question now is, you know, is this the because normally the it's a strong defense. No one will apologize. But the press briefing was at 2:00, and by 4:00 he was on Wolf Blitzer. Quite frankly, being just belittled by Wolf Blitzer, whose parents were Holocaust survivors, and taken out to the woodshed, I would say. So, Alan, I mean, obviously, I think you have to apologize for something like that, but then can you get around it after that?
The question is he just stupid, or is this a plan? You'll remember when they did the Holocaust Memorial statement, they forgot to mention the word Jews. Remember that?
Right.
And, of course, he does it during Passover. It's just unbelievable, you know, that this is going on the way that it is. Now, you know, every time somebody accuses Trump of and the administration of incipient anti-Semitism, he says, my son-in-law is Jewish. What are you talking about? You know, what can I say? There's always a comeback to that. My mother would have said the worst kind, but it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is that this keeps happening, and maybe, just maybe, it's a signal to the base.
So the signals, it seems to me, okay, you're holding your head, Rich, but the signal to the base, like, here are things I don't understand. Let's just take, we'll put Spicer's comments aside for a moment. But
okay.
But why not go to the Seder? Why not?
Are you talking to me?
No.
Oh, okay.
For Trump or Alan may be talking about you. No, I was just talking about Jared Kushner or Ivanka. You have an official White House event. I mean, to Alan's point of symbolism and especially when you already have that rap, why do you do that? And then to have this on top of it on Passover.
I don't put the two things together. Look, I don't think anybody, no one's defending Spicer. I've just never seen a guy so unsuited for his particular job as this guy. It's really almost comical. It is comical. He doesn't have the right personality for it. He doesn't have the right vocabulary. He's so pugnacious.
Rich.
It's just awful. Yeah, Alan.
Wait, we only have about 30 seconds, but go ahead, Alan.
Okay, this guy, this is POTUS, the President of the United States. You get somebody who can control themselves, who knows what they're doing. It's just unbelievable that he's still there.
We'll let people think about that. Cogitate. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about it some more. We welcome your comments. Panel at WAMC.org. Rosemary's working up her response. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. Very nice to have you with us, Rosemary Armeo, Rich Honan, and Alan Shartok. And we'll get to your letters in just a second. A lot of the letters, of course, wishing Rosemary a fond farewell and reacting to the news that she'll be leaving us in a month or so. Just so you know, if you write them to panel at WAMC.org, obviously we're not going to read them all, but...
I see them. I'll read them all.
But Rosemary will get them, so know that. But I did want it real quickly. Bill wrote and said, Rosemary, so sorry to hear you're leaving. Can you take Rich with you? okay. So when last we left you, we were talking about the Sean Spicer bumble, and we were waiting for you to respond. Rosemary,
me,
yes.
You to respond is me. Yeah, I think he's an idiot. I don't think this was a deliberate part of an effort to further demean Jews or show the bigotry that's part of the campaign. I agree it is, but I don't think this was part of it. I think he just generally made a mistake, as he has done in the past. He used an analogy that absolutely did not work, and he did it in public where he was caught up really quickly by people who actually know their history. And realized that he was saying the wrong thing. And then he came back and immediately apologized. I do not think that Sean Spicer is going to last very long, but I do not think this is the event that's going to bring him down.
Wouldn't you get rid of him, though? I mean,
I would have gotten rid of him before this, Alan. As soon as Melissa McCarthy came on and was such, you know, just devastated him, I'd be easing him out from that. So and that may be underway, but I don't think it's going to be this event.
So ask yourself this question. It's the United States of America. It has everybody from the best college in America, Hunter, to, you know, the other places like Harvard, places like that. They can find anybody they want, but they keep this guy there. There's got to be a rationale for that. They see Melissa McCarthy. They see all of the everything that's said about the guy. Why do they keep him there? That's the question.
There's two things. One is Trump does have an intense loyalty to employees. We saw it with the also idiot who allowed the first lady, the future first lady, to go to the Republican convention and give a speech plagiarized from, you know, his opponent's wife. That was horrendous. She was not fired. She had worked there for a long time. Spicer does have strong allies, including Reince Priebus. And that wing of the establishment Republican Party that he keeps efforts with. And this is a very prideful man. And we're saying, oh, your guy's an idiot. Get rid of him. What is he going to do? He's going to turn around and say, you're wrong. He's doing a fabulous job. He's great. Look how great he looks in the new suits. So it's just not his nature.
But wait. But this is astounding to me because they have yesterday, the president said something bad about Bannon. You want to talk about loyalty or Flynn? He doesn't mind firing people. That's the name of his show. You're fired, whatever it's called.
I would say it's almost by the same standards, Alan, because he didn't say a bad thing. He just said a neutral thing instead of big support. And the reason for that is because Bannon has come across himself, not just us saying it, not just liberals or the media saying it, but Bannon himself has portrayed himself in public as the brains behind the win, the brains behind the Trump administration. And that annoys him. Spicer doesn't do that. Spicer is nothing but servile.
It did, and he made that very clear by saying he was only with us for a little while.
Right.
You know, in the meantime, he's capable of turning on his own, is my point, when it becomes pragmatic for him, Rosemary. Yeah. That's all.
And seriously, Holocaust centers?
You know, the man is in sweating in front of the cameras. You've got reporters all like raising their eyebrows like, what? He was under pressure and he just broke. And he did say Holocaust Center. He didn't say like War Center or something that really made it sound like a resort. He thought the word Holocaust would do it. He's just not good under pressure, which you need to be a press secretary.
Yeah, he's not very good on his feet and he's not very good at speaking to the public.
Other than that, he's great.
Yeah, it's kind of the job at hand, right? All right, so we have a couple of letters. Susan writes, must deserve criticism of Spicer's comment on Hitler not using poison gas, and finally an apology. But who calls a concentration camp a Holocaust Center? We just mentioned that. Is there not an apology needed here? Well, there was. He gave an apology to
copious, and it wasn't finally. He did it right away and multiple times. What he should have done, if he were fast on his feet, he would have done is just stopped and said, oh, wow, that was really stupid. That is not what I meant.
You're
going to
misinterpret what I just said. Let me say what I really mean.
Yeah, he didn't. He just tried to dig his way out, and of course it got worse and worse because, again, he can't operate under pressure.
Because there was a reporter that tried to correct him on the—
She gave him a break. She said, I'm giving you a chance to restate this. And he goes, yes, I appreciate it. And then made it worse. That's when he said Holocaust centers.
Spicer's comment wasn't insensitive. It was frightening that someone in his position can forget about 6 million Jews as well as gays and so many others gassed by Hitler is unconscionable.
Yeah, see, that's liberal spin. He didn't forget about him. He was so concentrated, so focused on saying what Assad had done wrong that he minimized something that cannot be minimized.
I believe it was what's that guy on CNN? Smirkanish or
Mike Smirkanish.
Yeah, and he was on and said, well, first of all, PR 101, don't bring up Hitler. Like, just don't bring up Hitler. Like, you know, if you're going to say, well, even Hitler didn't do that.
I agreed with everybody, except that how many times has Trump been compared to Hitler by the liberals?
No. Meaning, no.
Oh, but he is. His rise to power.
He's worse than Assad, I know.
Yeah. But not for atrocities been compared to his rise to power, Rich, and taking over democracy and turning it into fascism. That's
he was
all.
Talking about in a PR sense of an evil, but I understand
what you're saying. And by the way, even the United States has used chemical weapons. Vietnam was not mentioned at all yesterday, where we plainly used napalm and Agent Orange. So many other places
Paraquat.
Have used.
Remember the Paraquat?
Yeah. Come on. It's not like Assad is a horrible person, but he doesn't stand out alone in the annals of history.
Well, he's pretty bad.
Well, he is. Do you guys really think? Well, that's my way of sort of getting into the conversation. my question for you guys is: do you really think that the president of the United States doesn't hammer on Spicer all day long and say, tell him this. I can't believe that doesn't happen.
Oh, I'm sure it does. I think that it does. I just don't think that Spicer then is able to execute on it.
Yeah.
I think that's the problem.
We see those notes coming in all the time, which I think is really funny, too, when he's sitting at the podium and then all of a sudden a staffer will come in with a note that you just assume is coming
tell
from
him
the president. Right.
Stand up straight.
Right.
You have spinach in your teeth.
Please, your flag pin is upside down. It's a distress signal.
So Malcolm Nance, who was on MSNBC last night after he was here with us in the morning, talked about, you know what, guys, we got to stop talking about Spicer. It's not a planned distraction, but it is definitely a distraction. We are on the brink of nuclear war over North Korea. We're saber rattling. They are too. That's a bad thing. And instead, look what we're talking about.
Right. Obviously, that will be. I think we're talking about both. But I mean, just in general, I think
it was the lead story on all the MSM, though. Right? Was
I thought that was United Airlines.
Was the Spicer? United Airlines is big too. But that was. You're right. Nobody led with Korea. Nobody led with Syria. Right. Everybody led with Spicer, and you're right. And maybe the United Airlines.
Yeah. Well, and probably for the reasons that I just mentioned too. Even when we got off on it a little bit, but it is. But I think it's because it's one of those things that Alan describes as all the, you know, it's one that people really understand very easily.
Well, you know, that whole issue of what's the most important news story, readers talk to us about this and listeners talk to us about this all the time. There are some who are upset that we never mention the shooting at the school in San Bernardino yesterday.
Yeah.
And they're right. I mean, that's a horrendous story. A man goes in, shoots his estranged wife, and in the process, he does this in her classroom, manages to kill one of her students. A horrible thing, and yet it doesn't measure up to the eve of a nuclear cataclysm, perhaps in North Korea, or a spokesman who is looks like a Holocaust denier. That doesn't mean it isn't important and it should be discussed somewhere, but I agree with Joe. I would not have put it on the list of stories to mention here. It's a domestic incident.
Well, there's a question, Rosemary, I have for you as a superb journalist, and that is, there was a while there, you may remember, that when bomb threats were coming in, they were always reported on the air. And then there was this general agreement, we're not going to talk about the bomb threats because it only creates more bomb threats. Now you hear bomb threats on the air again. What do you think?
Oh, that's a really interesting one. I was an education reporter in a district in Virginia one time, and there were bomb threats going into all the schools. And we did that. We said, we're not going to report on this anymore because it's just encouraging it. And the kids liked it, too, because they'd get out of school every time there was an alert. And then the governor of the state came to a high school for a speech, and there was a bomb threat. That changes everything. And so do we report it or not? So we ended up doing a story about the trouble with bomb threats, how school people have to deal with them, how the media deals with them, and that's how we handled it. When you report on something, is that responsible or does it encourage copycatters? Many people say you shouldn't report about suicide, especially teen suicide, because it encourages copying. My view is that the kind of people who would copy a suicide already know about it. They're classmates. They're people who live in the same community or relatives. It's not the newspapers and radios that are doing that.
We saw this recently with the multitude of bomb threats at Jewish community centers and schools recently. But I think, and I agree with you and I understand the reasons why, but I think it's also important that we know how many there are, right? That we know that it isn't just a one-off, that we're seeing this across the country at a disturbing rate.
Right. If it's news, you got what scares me more than anything is when news organizations start deciding, you know, that for some reason other than importance.
Right.
You know, that
we won't put this out. Right. People don't need to know this.
The dude on CNN who said, well, we're not going to play this game. Was it? I keep thinking Don Lemon. Is that his name? Yeah. And he said, well,
we don't like him.
Yeah. I mean, for him, he made some kind of statement that we've decided not to show this to you because it's, you know, we don't think you should be thinking about it.
I remember way back in the Nixon administration, he had a Secretary of Agriculture, Earl Butz, who made a disgusting, racist joke, and he was fired for it. Yeah. So the joke is in and of itself newsworthy, but it was so racist, most places did not print it. And we would be sitting in the newsroom getting calls from the public saying, hey, what do they really say? We didn't have the right not to run it. You know, you put the warnings on, you say this is his joke, he got fired over it, he deserved it, whatever, but you don't hold back the information.
Right. The only other thing I will say about the bomb threats, too, is one thing that has changed, one thing that's we have in our society that we didn't have before is the immediacy of the news. Yeah. There's almost, I'm not going to call it a public safety aspect, but you could actually, you could be reading about a bomb threat that you may be involved in.
Well, we saw this.
You may see this, whether it's on social media or on the news.
On my phone. And it's
almost a way of getting the word out to the public.
We saw this with the Orlando shooter, that he was checking social media and CNN to see how it was being reported.
Pretty close to it in Times Square.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When they got the truck. Yeah. Yeah.
My students alerted me to this. I didn't have this on my syllabus, but there's a Netflix series called Black Mirror. Maybe some of you have heard of it. It's like a black science fiction. It's very, very interesting. And they're in season three now, but the opening on season one was set in London, and it's terrorists grab the princess. She's the Kate Middleton character.
Oh, yeah.
And they say, we're not going to release her until you satisfy our one demand. The prime minister has to have sex with a pig on live television. And does he do it or not? And are people going to watch? Do they want him to do it? He's reading the polls to figure out what to do. It's such a great commentary on the way life is right now.
Well, that took a turn. All right, let's... All right.
Terrible.
Let's take a break.
And I didn't use any bad words.
No, I know. Let's take a break and try to wash that from our memories, and we'll be right back after this.
Support for WMC comes from McTeague & McClellan, designers, makers, and buyers of fine jewelry since 1895, specializing in platinum, gold, diamonds, and precious gems, studio and showroom in Great Barrington, mc2jewels.com. High Peaks Solar, offering solar farm memberships for National Grid customers in the Capital District. Information meeting every Tuesday, 6:30, at the Hope United Methodist Church, Eagle Mills, hopesolarfarm.com. And Bedard Brothers, representing 7 automotive brands in one Berkshire County location for 60 years and counting. Sales service of new or certified pre-owned cars or trucks. It's hard to beat Bedard. BedardBrothers.com.
We were talking about North Korea a moment ago, and I want to get to that story, which is the leader of China. So she and Trump they spoke by phone today about the tensions in North Korea, as a prominent Chinese state-run newspaper warned the North that it faced a cutoff of vital oil supplies if it dared test a nuclear weapon. The phone call, reported by China's state broadcaster CCTV, came hours after Trump cautioned Beijing in a Twitter message and a television interview that it needed to help Washington rein in North Korea, a Chinese ally. During the call, which was initiated by Mr. Trump, Mr. Xi said that the matter should be solved through peaceful means, that according to the state news agencies. Tensions escalated further on Wednesday as reports said the Japanese Navy would join the U.S. Navy strike group led by the aircraft carrier Carl Vinson in its mission off the Korean coast. Those joint exercises would take place as the American Armada passed through waters close to Japan, that according to Reuters.
So Xi has now said, we're going to help you in interfacing with North Korea. Isn't that what the story was? That was the story I read this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only question is,
China is now going to take some hand in these talks.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there talks or is it a threat?
Tomato, tomato. I mean, with, you know, whatever it is.
And the only question is how crazy is North Korea in this? I mean,
that's not the only question. How crazy is Trump in all this?
You know, but hasn't everything worked exactly?
There is that.
Wait a minute. First of all, Rosemary, you and I actually called this last week. Everybody said, what are you going to do about North Korea? And we said, you probably have to show some military options. I was talking about maybe installations along the South Korea border, and then use trade as leverage to get China involved. And it seems like that's exactly what's going on. Didn't China just cancel a huge coal contract with North Korea?
Yes.
And started buying that coal for the first time from other producers, non-North Korean, that type of coal from other non-North Korean producers? Mm-hmm. This is exactly the way it's actually supposed to work.
I think Rich is right, and we did talk about this. What makes me a little unnerved is that I hope this was discussed when she was here last week rather than truly through Twitter and in calls at the last minute as a ship is steaming towards North Korea. I hope that's really not how it's being done.
Oh, but there was an intervening event. And there was an intervening event of great magnitude, which was the Tomahawk missile, cruise missile attack on Syria. That was the intervening event. And now all of a sudden. Well, I'm.
Please. You really think China was cowed by that empty attack, no. That meaningless, non-effective attack? Really? The Chinese media was filled with just mockery of it. I don't believe that.
They didn't have a deal a week ago, and this week they seem to be talking. I'm just listing the chronology. Or maybe they. I assume, Rosemary, they did talk about this last week.
How do you know they didn't have a deal a week ago?
I don't know. I mean, I just said I assume they were talking about this last week.
You have a State Department that makes no announcements, that doesn't talk to the press. I believe this has been talked. This is in China's self-interest, so it does not seem ridiculous to me.
Yeah, this is working. This is right. This Wait, didn't we want to get China involved in the negotiations with North Korea, or in this situation? I won't call them negotiations because that probably rises it to too high a level.
Right.
But didn't we want China to get involved? And now China at least is saying that it's getting involved, and we're seeing empirically some things like the coal contract and things like that.
Your assumption is that we didn't have China involved before, that Obama and his weak policy never did that. That's baloney, because we haven't had this kind of trouble with North Korea before. I think that China has always been involved. I hope that the terms of the agreement or the talks or whatever were going on were more thought out than what we're seeing in Syria, and I don't think the Syrian fake attack had anything to do with China's policies.
But Rosemary, it may be that that Rich is right. Did I say that?
God,
it may be
I'm shocked.
That Rich is, it may be that Rich is right in that the event wasn't that important, unless it just showed that Trump was so unpredictable himself that and acted on whim that the Chinese got a little worried.
Okay, so let me ask my question, which is just because I don't understand it. You're President Trump, and so he has not had any tweets about Syria. There have been no tweets about Russia, and yet he seems to be provoking almost constantly the North Koreans. Do we read into that?
How is he's responding? What you call it provoking, I call it responding actually less than proportionally to North Korean action.
I would read you, okay, I'd read you the tweet, but I, is our internet down, Rob? Do we know if our internet is down? I'm having trouble bringing stuff up, but that's all right. So there was a tweet this morning that was basically saying, you know, don't mess with us or else. But my question is, even whatever the wording is, then why not mention Syria? Why not mention these other places? And why are you solely focused on North Korea?
Because Syria is being, first of all, I don't know because I don't know what's in his mind, but Syria is being actively worked right now. Tillerson is actively meeting with, I forgot.
He's in Moscow.
Yeah, I forgot the name of their foreign minister. But, I mean, they're having talks right now. That situation is being actively worked. It's being actively efforted, as we say in business, right? So,
say that in business?
Some people do.
Effort is a noun.
Effort is a noun.
You know what the other thing we say is incented? We're trying or trying to incent people?
This is why people hate lawyers.
That's one of the many reasons.
But this is my question is asked in almost as a tag team to what Alan was saying earlier about the Spicer incident of what you do, of what you say to your base.
This has nothing to do with the base. This has to do with active negotiations in foreign policy, which I think his base approves of, because he's doing what he said he would do. And if he had to do something from a foreign policy standpoint that his base did not approve of, maybe there would be a different calculus. But this has nothing to do with his base. You guys have to think of everything through that lens. This is active foreign policy negotiation.
I don't think it's to his base. I think he does that automatically. But he wants to project himself as a bully, as a tough guy. I'm standing up to North Korea, unlike our weak former president who let them walk all over us. I think that's part of it. I'm very glad my sons are past the age of military service. I think that he could end us into some other conflicts more so than the president he criticized for getting us into conflicts.
The two tweets I was referring to is North Korea is looking for trouble. If China decides to help, that would be great. If not, we'll solve the problem without them, USA. The one that came out an hour ago was had a good call last night with the president of China concerning the menace of North Korea.
I don't see what's wrong with either of those.
Okay.
How about evil access? Access. Did you find trouble with that? North Korea was part of George W. Bush's evil axis.
Oh,
is provocative.
Evil axis of yeah. I didn't hear this one. I don't pay attention to the
tweets. Axis of evil,
tweets.
Right?
Yeah. The axis of evil, right, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The evil axis, is that what he called it?
You mean
it?
They're
evil
not?
Axis. Yeah, I mean, that's provocative language to North Korea. If he called us that, we would certainly be provoked by it. I would even be provoked by it.
Wait a second. That's false equivalency if I ever heard it.
Why?
I mean, we're not the North Koreans. This guy's a madman. And he's been acting like a madman all along.
Oh, my God. I don't see such a big difference, Alan, between Trump and Kim Jong-un. Yeah. He's mean to poor people. He is switching stuff from domestic production to military. He's provoking other countries. Where's the big difference?
Yeah.
Following.
If you don't see the difference, then we just don't have any intersection of issues to be able to talk about on that.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll talk about Dennis Rodman at the break. We'll be right back. News with Ray Graff and much more. We'll be back with more conversation after this. Well, good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. A lot going on, so we will talk about other issues making news. And let us talk about the story that the Washington Post sent out yesterday saying that the FBI obtained a secret order last summer to monitor the communications of an advisor to presidential candidate Donald Trump, part of an investigation into possible links between Russia and the campaign. This according to law enforcement and other U.S. officials. The FBI and the Justice Department obtained the warrant targeting Carter Page's communications after convincing a foreign intelligence surveillance court judge that there was probable cause to believe Page was acting as an agent of a foreign power, in this case, Russia. This is the clearest evidence so far that the FBI had reason to believe during the 2016 presidential campaign that a Trump campaign advisor was in touch with Russian agents. Such contacts are now at the center of an investigation into whether the campaign coordinated with the Russian government to swing the election in Trump's favor.
Okay, I have to admit, I'm really confused by this. Why is this news just coming out now? I don't know about FISA records, how difficult it is to find out that a warrant was issued then. Why are we just knowing about it now? Was it a leak?
It was a leak.
Yeah. Oh, good. Thank you, whistleblowers. And Alan, my question to you is this the evidence you kept predicting that it would come out and then it would get real for Trump over this Russian connection? Is this it?
Well, I have always, listen, I have always believed that the Russian thing is what would undo him.
Right.
But of course, there's another side to that. I'm scared to death about certain factoids. Factoid one, the FBI guy Comey goes to the White House and presumably sits down with Trump for an hour. Don't like that. Don't like it at all. Don't like the fact that he helped win the election for Trump over Hillary. And there's one investigation, number one. The House of Representatives investigation is so corrupted that it's not even worth talking about. The clowns who are coming after Nunes are even worse. They're talking about looking into Democratic excesses. And the third, of course, is the Senate, where everybody who's looking at this has pinned their hopes. So it's marginal, to say the least. When somebody leaks, they leak for a reason. And the reason is that it's not going well, or they feel that he's going to get away with it. I think the Russian thing is the bête noire, and I think that so much, including international policymaking, is being made by the Trump administration in order to deflect attention to this incredible problem that they had. I think they were hopelessly naive, maybe, in the campaign, thinking that they could get away with it and that it would not be part of the American dialectic. But it is.
Rich, you think this is just more smoke and this has to do with us being upset that Hillary lost?
Absolutely. If you look at the facts, what happened was this guy, what was his name, Page? Trump listed him in a list of advisors. He was meeting with the Washington Post or something. He said, here's my foreign policy advisors, and listed him. There's no evidence that the guy ever did anything as an actual advisor for Trump. But Trump himself did mention his name. I don't know if he ever met him.
One in a long line of incompetent people working for him, Sean Spicer.
Sure. The guy was doing energy finance deals, and he met with a guy at a Russian bank who was also doing energy finance deals, and they talked about energy finance, and it turns out now the guy, in addition to working for the bank, was a Russian spy.
You're not...
Page comes out and admits, and I think
How
actually...
How do you know that?
That's been in the news. But you're not saying that's the only contact he had. This is the guy who famously went on the Chris Hayes show and said, oh, I may have seen him once in Cleveland. And Chris Hayes said, wait, you just said you didn't meet him at all. He goes, well, I might have seen him in Cleveland. And is Cleveland the only place? Oh, maybe four or five time other time. It's a very famous clip that plays endlessly on MSNBC. That's not the only contact he had.
Listen, there's a lot of stuff that plays endlessly on MSNBC.
But it's Carter Page talking.
Okay.
It isn't like they made it up.
Including the right winger that they play every morning, Morning Joe every morning, Rich. You probably should remember that.
The guy talked to this, basically this fellow Page talked to somebody who held himself out as a Russian banker doing energy deals, and it turned out the guy apparently was also a Russian spy. Page goes back, and I think he admitted that. And said, yeah, I met with the guy. I didn't know he was a spy. And, of course, they would get a warrant to check out those communications. You can't just take somebody's words when he says, I didn't know he was a spy. You have to check it out. I have no problem with that.
Is why I just don't think it's going to stick. I mean, conservatives are just going into contortionist positions to not see connections between the campaign and the Russians. This is Trump who said we didn't talk. There's no contact whatever with Russians that I'm aware of, and every day there's a drip, drip, drip of more connections, including his son-in-law.
Let's talk about the Russian government versus they obviously talk to Russian people. And I don't think they denied talking to people who were members of the Russian government.
So the energy guy in the bank in Russia is only a private citizen, not connected to the government. That's pretty rich.
That's what they thought. They didn't know that he was a spy. Unlike the guy you apparently had on the show yesterday who came out and said, I'm a spy. Most people actually who are spies don't say they're spies.
A former spy.
Oh, former spy.
He said he was a spy.
He was a spy. Yeah. To the best of our knowledge, but hell, we thought Rosemary was a spy.
I'm still unconvinced either way. I'm not a spy.
No,
no, she's not. And Rich, I think that it's extraordinary for you to propose to us that when these people talk to each other, that we know what they were talking about, or we're going to take his word about what they were talking about? Nonsense.
No, I just said we should not take his word, and the FBI or whoever subpoenaed the communications should be checking it out. The guy admitted that he talked to a guy who turned out to be a Russian spy. That's fine.
Turned out to be. Yeah.
So what's the latest with Nunes? Yeah. What do we think about him lately? That the latest thing is that he made it all up. What is the deal with him?
Well, it wasn't that it made it up, was it? It was the CNN report that I read was that the information was not. Well, I guess it is. He made it up. That it wasn't as damning as he made it out to be.
What was that all about?
It's about being pathetic. I mean, the guy was a tool of Trump. And instead of being the head of an investigatory committee, he goes and he's playing the old role as campaign coordinator and goes in and protects Trump at the expense of his committee and his credibility and everything else. Disgusting.
I thought that the claim was fully vindicated when Susan Rice came out and said, yeah, you know, I did ask to unmask somebody who was a member of the Trump campaign. And the original charge was the Obama administration is listening into conversations with that involve Trump advisors, aides, whatever you want to call them. That was the claim. Okay. That claim has now been pretty fully vindicated.
I would just like to point out that Carter Page talks to someone who's completely innocent. He should be talking to him, and that person turns out to be a spy. But Susan Rice, the national security advisor, asked to unmask someone having communication with Russians, and it doesn't turn out to be a campaign a person for Trump. She was targeting him. Do you see the difference in that?
So let me just read, just so everybody, so listeners are on the baseline here. After a review of the same intelligence reports brought to light by House Intelligence Chairman Devin Nunes, both Republican and Democratic lawmakers and aides have so far found no evidence that Obama administration officials did anything unusual or illegal, according to multiple sources in both parties.
Can I ask who you're reading this from?
It's a CNN.
So
you're going to discount it?
I absolutely discount it, but keep going.
Okay. Their private assessment contradicts President Donald Trump's allegations that former Obama National Security Advisor Susan Rice broke the law by requesting the unmasking of U.S. individuals' identities. Trump had claimed the matter was a, quote, massive story. However, over the last week, several members and staff of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees have reviewed intelligence reports related to those requests at NSA headquarters in Fort Meade, Maryland. One congressional intelligence source described the request made by Rice as normal and appropriate for officials who serve in that role to the president. Another source said there's absolutely no smoking gun on the reports, urging the White House to declassify them to make clear there was nothing alarming in the documents.
Well, that's good enough for me. If an unnamed source who's a staffer on the Democratic side of the congressional committee says there's nothing there, that's good enough for me. I think we should drop it right there. Listen, Trump was clearly wrong when he said the unmasking was illegal. We now know it was not illegal to unmask it, and I don't think even I or anybody else on my side of the fence thinks that Rice herself disclosed this name. I don't think anybody
did. Right.
And so I don't think there's anything illegal in either of those acts.
Alan?
Which Rich is, by the way, why the Rice claim, the whole Rice thing that was raised by the Republicans, is gone. Basically, you're raising it again, and maybe it's on Fox. But I tell you right now, it has not been taken seriously. And that's one of the ways you can judge whether something is important or not. It's been dismissed.
By whom? By you? By the left? By the MSM?
Press, by the,
come on.
Well, according to you, everybody's
the
left.
MSM, mainstream media. Oh, I hate that. God.
Hey, if you guys can call us alt-right, we can call you MSM.
No, we don't call you alt-right. We call you racist.
Ah, that's right. And Nazi. You forgot Nazi.
And Nazi and fascist, right?
Oh.
And I want to take this moment to just say before Joe calls the end of this that Rosemary has agreed to come back whenever she is back in the area to be on the air.
Especially when Rich is here. Yes, I have.
Right.
Right. I don't even know. Okay, let's. I want to give some letters. Go ahead, Alan.
Go ahead, because we're badly off track at this point.
I was just going to be fresh. Forget it. Go ahead.
Okay. I got stung by a mosquito over the weekend on my palm, so now my palm itches.
Oh, that's
not a good thing, right?
I think it was a long range plan by Trump and Spicer to take down members of the left wing media.
So it's because whenever I move my palm, then it makes it itchy. But then when you have itchy palms, you assume what company's coming? Is that what that is, or is that?
I will tell you what I used to hear itchy palms meant.
That's what I think. Yeah, I thought of that too. You know, in Catholic school, we said that too.
Yeah. Bad boy.
All right. Where's the pig? John says, I'm going to go back. I'm going to back you up, Rich, in Trump's foreign policy. I think because Trump made a forceful action in Syria, talks in Russia and China are being taken much more seriously than they were under Obama. That from John. A Korean veteran writes to us and says, hey, how come nobody ever mentions General MacArthur anymore? He would certainly be greatly amused at what's still going on now with North Korea, more than 50 years after he wanted to unite Korea and not withdraw from fully winning that war. Then this is all really Eisenhower's legacy.
And that's interesting.
Well, wait a second. He didn't get into trouble for trying to unite Korea, and he almost got away with it. It was China. He wanted to go into China. Please, let's not change the history.
Well, also, you know, Eisenhower's been getting some hits lately also because wasn't it under Eisenhower that the U.S. started the Iranian nuclear weapons program?
I don't remember.
Yes,
I think there was
a program where
Atoms for Peace.
Atoms for Peace.
Yes.
All right, my understanding of the Eisenhower Korean connection was that MacArthur wanted to go across the line into North Korea with the aim of uniting them, and that would bring the threat of a Chinese invasion, not that he wanted to invade China.
Right.
That they would get involved then.
No, I think he and LeMay and the other guys wanted to bomb China. I certainly know LeMay did, and the Air Force head at the time.
Yeah,
that's right. That's part of being old, you know.
I got to read
more
history.
That's part of being old. You remember these things,
era of history. I got to read about it.
Or maybe you think you remember them.
Don't remember it. I wasn't
History is history is replete though with commanders or politicians kind of wanting to move forward to kind of join everyone together and finally a president or somebody very high level like Eisenhower says no, you know, we're going to stop here.
Let's go back to the letters. We go to Lawrence, who says, in Spicer's defense, well, no, not really in his defense, but he does have literally the worst job in America.
He took it in. He's highly paid, and he's world famous.
Yeah,
it isn't so bad.
I think that's part of it, though, is, one, I think it's a ridiculous job. I think the job anymore, it should almost be more of an administrative post where that person just tells the press, this is who's meeting with who and where. I mean, who cares what Sean Spicer's take on, you know, Trump's foreign policy is? And I think that's been going on for a while. But the other problem I think they truly have is I don't know that there's anybody really good who wants the job. So I don't know that like
stop it.
I don't know. I don't know that a Kellyanne Conway or a higher level person.
She's not really good.
Well, she's a lot smarter than Spicer or Laura Ingraham or somebody
Sean
from
Hannity.
The press.
Oh my God.
Yeah, Sean Hannity would be pretty much like he'd actually even be better than Spicer.
Yeah, he could be fun.
Look, there are people who know how to speak diplomatically, who know how to hold their T and mind their B. You know, I mean, they have to just they They just have to really get somebody good. And there are thousands of people who are really good, Rich. It's ridiculous to say that this is the only person who would take the job.
I don't know. Don't you remember reading, did you read Stephanopoulos's book when he, yeah. the first time when he became, yeah. And I think there's actually a clip of his first day as press secretary. And he starts talking about something and he says, and last night the president and Mrs. Clinton attended some gala or something like that. And somebody yelled out, what did she wear? Or who did she wear? And he just looks like a deer in the headlights, and he says, "Wow, it's a new world." You know, I don't know. I don't know that it's a job that a lot of people want.
I just want
is
to.
Is that the same? Sorry.
No, go ahead. What you're going to say is much more important than what I'm going to say.
Not at all. Is that the same Stephanopoulos who said in his book, the same book, that Mario Cuomo was slated to go on the Supreme Court and that Carter, Clinton was going to appoint him and the deal was all made, but Mario pulled out and didn't go forward. But Mario, yes. on a phone call with me, said to me, he'll never appoint me to the Supreme Court. You watch. And then wrote him a letter taking himself off the list. There's certain things about the Stephanopoulos book that make me a little queasy.
All right.
Silence.
Okay. No, I was waiting for Rich to talk.
I actually think the thing about the book, and you know, I'm not hawking the book, but he
which
admits,
is like 20 years old now, right?
It is, but it's interesting to read in this yeah. context. He admits to so many rookie mistakes that he himself made. Yeah, you know that I actually to me it gave it an air of credibility. You know, like because he was basically
as
replaced by David
Juergen,
I think. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah,
so, as credible as Rich.
As credible as he is the host of Good Morning America.
Yeah, really.
We're getting a lot of letters, people saying that itchy palm means that you're coming into money. That's what their mothers told
That's
them.
That's not what I heard.
Okay, I'm just saying there seems to be a... Yeah. Cassandra writes, my question this morning is what you all think of the likelihood of North Korea actually firing a nuclear weapon. This terrifies me daily.
They have actually fired.
She should be terrified
already. Yeah. I think
she should be
high
fired.
Probability.
She should be. Yeah.
Should be terrified. Yeah.
She should have, of course, be worried about that. You know, I think, unlike a lot of people, that the guy's a madman and capable of anything, including when it comes down to its self-destruction.
Well, Rich and I have both said we don't think he's entirely mad. That there's some method to it.
Yeah. I think he's evil, but I don't think he is unhinged from reality. I really don't.
Right.
I think he's acting in his
own. Oh, yeah, when you have your brother murdered, that's not unhinged for reality.
There have been days
right?
when I wanted my sisters done in. Yeah, I can get that.
Wait a minute. But you didn't do it. You didn't do it. That's the point.
But if I had access to gas that you just rub on their face like powder, Alan, I don't know.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I mean, read all of British history, or the history
right.
of the Medici.
Or
I mean,
Chinese
there was,
history.
Yeah, I mean, there was. I mean, getting rid of the
well,
getting rid of the enemies around
right.
you. It doesn't make him a good person, but it doesn't make him nuts.
It doesn't make him outside.
That
the mainstream.
Makes him all
correct.
Right.
Correct. It doesn't make him outside the mainstream of dictator,
cruel, evil
dictator tyrants. Yes.
Yeah, monarchs. Right.
To which I say nonsense.
Bob quickly writes, this for Rosemary, it appears that frequently U.S. publications and programs refrain from showing gory photos or videos of events when the gory visions are printed or shown in other countries.
Yep.
Is this self-censorship appropriate?
In the United States, oh boy, I argue that all the time. I worked in Algeria where every day on the newspaper you would find like shredded babies being held up. You know, it's like, look at the horror of this attack, or a teenage body laid out on a gurney with the, you know, the guts exposed. And no women would buy the paper. They were disgusted by it. So there is a certain amount of taste involved that you do. You don't need to show pictures of all that. And it also makes people a little bit... they get used to it when they see it every day. It doesn't seem so horrible. On the other hand, our policies are weird. Like, you can show the bodies, foreign bodies. If it's Korean shredded, that's okay, but you don't show Americans.
All
so
right.
It's our policies are weird.
We're out of time.
Oh,
I just
up.
Want to finally say that Tony wrote in and said that you are mistaking itchy palms for hairy palms. I will leave it there. Have a wonderful night. Have a wonderful morning. Alan, thank you very much.
Okay, great.
Rich, thank you. A reminder, if you go to our website, we have all the information for Rosemary's farewell party on May 4th. All right. Thank you very much. We'll be back after this.